You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. This has been a rocky week in Congress, and it may tell a broader story about American politics in general. Earlier this week, Republicans fell short in a vote to impeach Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas, in spite of ongoing pressure from the right side of the party to impeach a Biden official. Congress also failed to pass a bipartisan border and foreign aid package after months of negotiation. Lawmakers faced pressure from the outside to not compromise and to not move things forward. Here's Senator James Lankford, Republican from Oklahoma, one of the authors of the border security bill, talking about his experience with a member of the partisan media.
In fact, I had a popular commentator that told me flat out, before they knew any of the contents of the bill, any of the content, nothing was out at that point, that told me flat out, if you try to move a bill that solves the border crisis during this presidential year, I will do whatever I can to destroy you.
Some political observers say this is part of a pattern that's emerged in recent years. What's called regular order, committee hearings and markups, debate, amendments, voting by both the House and Senate is growing less common. In its place, more filibustering, brinksmanship, and refusal to compromise. We're talking about some of the things that are causing this dysfunction in Congress, and you can join in at 800-642-1234. What are your thoughts on the state of Congress today? Does it seem to you like things work worse than they did in the past? Do you think there are solutions that might work? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. Lily Gorin is a professor of political science and global studies at Carroll University in Waukesha. Lily, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks for having me on today, Rob.
Now, there are probably many years where we could add a conversation about some kind of dysfunction in Congress. This isn't exactly a new thing, but by recent standards, does it seem like Congress is getting less functional over time to you?
Yeah, there are some different functional issues around Congress over, you know, a couple centuries now. And in the more recent past, you'd sort of seen Congress functional in such a way that they wanted to avoid being blamed for things. So they kind of, you know, did things in commission style so that, you know, there weren't a lot of fingerprints on it. But now what we're seeing is that members of Congress, and this is somewhat asymmetrical in terms of the parties, and that's actually a book that's been written called Asymmetrical Politics, that the members do want to get credit. Mostly what they want to get credit for is not doing things, in part because at least one party, mostly the Republican Party, has looked at the sort of idea that government shouldn't be involved in doing many things, and thus Congress should not be doing things.
Let's talk about the asymmetry there. What are the pressures or motivations on the Republican side of things, apart from, what you just mentioned, the idea that the government should do less? What are some of the pressures against compromise for Republicans?
Well, what we have seen over the years, and, you know, we can go and look at, you know, primary elections, is that both senators and House members, Republican senators and House members, have been very concerned about the threat of being, quote, primaried from their right, from people who will, you know, advocate for doing less, not doing anything at all, coming to Washington and, you know, sort of burning the whole place down. And so that is a dimension that many members of Congress, both in the House and the Senate, fear in terms of what their electoral hopes might be if they work for compromise, if they vote for compromise. And you saw some of this being debated, and you played the clip from Lankford, who basically was threatened by a media personality. And that's essentially what that would be looking like.
Let's look at some of the particulars this week. Now, we had that combo border security bill plus Ukraine funding plus Israel funding plus some more foreign aid funding. That combination of things that don't necessarily have to go together. Republicans had said, okay, we're not going to give you the Ukraine funding that President Biden wants unless we tackle border security. Okay, Republican, Democrat, Independent sat down, hammered out something, quickly rejected. So these issues are merged, and now the latest thing is, okay, well, what if we separate those out again and try to vote on them? What do you see in that process?
Well, this is where it's getting, you know, sort of very complicated. And politics is politics. You know, politics is about trading this for that, right? And so what we've seen over the last several months in this particular sphere with regard to aid for Ukraine, aid for Israel, aid with regard to supporting Taiwan and the border bill is that those were all looped together because, as you noted, the Republicans basically said that they wouldn't do one without the other. And so essentially their collaborators on the other side of the aisle, in this case, the Democrats and independents in the Senate sort of said, OK, let's put it all together in one big bill. And now we have this discussion about voting that for them one for one on their own, which may leave some people not voting for certain things like the aid in Ukraine, because there has been a sort of move within the Republican caucus away from supporting that.
Talking to Lily Gorin from Carroll University, looking at dysfunction in its current form in Congress. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Is there something you blame this on yourself, whether one party or another, or something else outside of the parties driving these problems? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. So, Lily, what we've been talking about, this border security bill, this is something where, okay, you got to have both parties cooperate in some ways. I want to turn to the Republican House majority now. Back-to-back, two votes called and then fell short. The vote to impeach Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas ended up not passing. And another bill on Israel funding, only Israel funding. It gets funky. There's a weird procedural thing, but it didn't meet the threshold to do it the way they wanted it to. Often there's a tendency to say, hey, we're not going to call the vote unless we know we're going to pass the vote in right. the House. What happened?
Well, I mean, there's been a lot of discussion about whether or not the Speaker of the House and the Majority Whip and so forth in the House have been counting their votes accurately. That's usually what's done before something comes to the floor, if it is, you know, potentially contentious and something that you don't necessarily want to see fail. And obviously, Speaker Johnson has a very slim margin in his caucus, as did Nancy Pelosi before him. And so it really is this question of, you know, do you have all the votes you need to pass something before you bring it to the floor so you don't end up with back-to-back failed votes like we saw?
And that narrow majority seems to be driving a lot of the issues for Republicans there because, you know, for any given vote, they can't afford to lose more than, you know, count them on one hand number of their
three.
Caucus.
Yeah. And again, like the impeachment of Mayorkas coming to the floor, they already knew that they were going to have two people who weren't voting, two members of the Republican caucus who weren't going to vote for that. So the question was, were there any Democrats that were going to break from the Democratic caucus? And would they hold on to all of the rest of the Republican caucus on the floor when the vote came forward? And they lost another vote in, you know, our representative from Wisconsin, Mike Gallagher. And they left the vote open for longer to see if they could change some minds. But that vote to impeach Secretary Mayorkas can come up again. So they may bring that forward again. Perhaps they will have a different vote outcome.
Lily Gorin is with us, professor of political science and global studies at Carroll University in Waukesha. She's talking with us about Congress and why it seems to be dysfunctional in very particular ways in recent years. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What are your thoughts on recent news from Congress, this effort to impeach Homeland Security Secretary Mayorkas falling short, at least for now? The ongoing struggle to pass something on immigration and border security ongoing this year and for 20 years, 40 years, depending on how far back you want to go. Join in at 800-642-1234. Do you want to see members of both parties cooperate with each other. If you support one side or the other, are you glad when your party does not compromise? Join in at 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're talking about dysfunction in Congress with Lily Gorin, professor of political science and global studies at Carroll University in Waukesha. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you think Congress gets enough done? Do you want to see your lawmakers compromise more? Or if you support a lawmaker from a particular party, do you want them to hold the line, compromise as little as possible? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Let's bring on a caller. Nancy is with us in Wausau. Nancy, hi.
Hi there. My whole comment is there's 532 people that are making these decisions for the entire country. And if they'd actually listen to us, they'd realize that they're acting like they're second graders fighting with each other with our money. I wish that they could actually get something done for this country and for the people in this country.
Nancy. Go ahead. Sorry, Nancy.
Most of us want to help Ukraine. Most of us want to help Israel. Most of us want health care. I mean, that's the majority of this country. That's what they should be doing while they're in office.
Nancy, thanks a lot for the call. Lily.
Yeah, I mean, Nancy is making a point that that is accurate in terms of a lot of the stuff that we are hearing about in terms of legislation on the floor is stuff that Americans are generally in the majority of supporting, as she notes, aid to Ukraine, aid to Israel, solving some of the problems at the border, and not necessarily the impeachment of Alexander Mayorkas. I haven't seen that polling as particularly high on the topic of issues that Americans are particularly engaged with. And so she is definitely making a key point that members of Congress are not always reflecting what the people want.
Thanks for the call, Nancy. One tricky thing, Lily, and it gets to something you touched on earlier. Many members of Congress are in safe seats. You know the Republicans going to win here. The Democrats going to win there. Some senators are basically in safe seats, depending on which state they're in. So is the constituency they're reaching out to the whole district, or is it the incredibly motivated primary voters from their own party?
That's generally the case, particularly in the House. I was talking about this with my students last week. As the House was originally designed, it wasn't supposed to be as, quote, stable in terms of having exactly the same people returned every time as it has become. And that is problematic in terms of, you know, what role the House itself is supposed to play in the sort of constitutional arrangements of the various branches and the parts of the branches themselves. So you do have some of this tension and pressure with regard to having primaries against you. And again, you know, this is statistically the case with regard, more so with regard to Republicans than Democrats in safe seats, that the greater concern is having somebody, you know, threaten you in a primary and thus you lose your incumbent position.
Let's go back to our callers at 800-642-1234. Mark is with us now in Wausau. Mark, hi.
Hi. I'm calling in regards to the fact that I don't see anybody in the House actually trying to do any work to create their own plan for Ukraine or Israel or the border. It just seems to be divisiveness and nothing is getting done. And if they're complaining about you know, nothing getting done, they're ones sitting on their hands doing nothing.
Mark, thanks for the call. Lily, we saw at least an effort in the Senate. I mentioned three people, a Democrat, Republican, Independent, on this border security, et cetera, bill. Mark says nothing similar going on in the House. Does he have that about right?
I mean, it seems to be that the House is, in fact, more dysfunctional these days. And again, you have these very, very slim majorities that we've seen in the House. So, you know, you likely have to get some support from the other side, or you have to bring your entire caucus to the table to vote for something, and you can't lose anybody. And so that seems to also be where we are with regard to the House.
Mark, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. Lily, I want to bring in the factor of the presidential election this year. Democrats are very definitely blaming, in part, former President Trump, current candidate Trump, for interfering with this border security, Ukraine funding, and so on, Bill, saying, hey, they don't want this problem to be solved. They want to have an ongoing border problem that they can point to in the election year. Republicans not coming out and saying that's why they did it. Do you see this as a factor?
Well, Donald Trump said exactly that to the Republicans, that he did not want the border issue solved, because he wanted to continue to run on it as a presidential candidate. And so I mean, it's not like that has been a secret, and you have in fact seen any number of elected representatives in the House and the Senate basically sort of saying, yeah, we're not going to solve this, because what we're hearing from our potential presidential candidate is we shouldn't solve it. You've also heard people like Mitt Romney and Senator Langford who've said, you know, this kind of interference and threatening from a presidential candidate is really terrible.
I want to look at the issue of immigration in particular, because depending on which piece of the structure, as I talk to immigration experts, some of our laws, you know, go back 20 years, some 30, some 40. There have been efforts again and again to try to come up with either piecemeal changes or comprehensive plans. And some under the Obama administration, there was a bipartisan group came out with a plan, ended up being spiked very similarly by conservative backlash. Why is immigration such a tough issue for Congress to do something, anything on?
Well, I mean, again, it's such a complicated policy area because there are so many different pieces of it. So if you change one piece of the immigration situation in the United States, that may impact and influence other dimensions of immigration policy. And so that's why it's often very difficult to just sort of change one aspect without sort of doing a more comprehensive undertaking. And, you know, you saw this, as you noted, in the Obama administration. This was also something that George W. Bush was working on during a long stretch of his administration towards the end of it, trying to get comprehensive immigration reform through. And he did not have support from a number of members of his party in Congress. The last time we had really substantial immigration reform was during the Reagan administration. And as my students note, they weren't alive for that.
Let's go back to our callers. Nate is with us now in Milwaukee. Nate, hello.
Hi, thank you for having me. Wisconsin, I hope, is in the process of shaking off some of the gerrymandering it's been under for the past several years. But I know some other states still deal with it, and I believe it was about 2 years ago, maybe a little earlier, that Democrats in the U.S. House actually passed a bill that was filibustered in the Senate that would have ended gerrymandering for all U.S. House districts, and perhaps that would have shaken things up enough that members of the House would have been more accountable to the people voting, regardless of what state they were from.
Interesting. Nate, we don't have a ton of time left, and I want to bring Lily in on that idea, the impact of gerrymandering on House districts.
Yeah, I mean, Nate brings up a really good point in terms of how gerrymandering by the states, in one direction or another, it goes both ways, can, in fact, make the seats safer, which is usually what has been happening. And if we can sort of get rid of gerrymandering in lots of different ways, then the House seats would be more competitive.
And Nate mentioned the idea of getting rid of gerrymandering as making politicians more responsive to voters if there's more of a risk of losing in a general election. Do you think that would work?
Well, that's the theory that was inaugurated in 1787. So... That's the original idea behind the House, was to be most responsive to the people who the members are representing, and not just a sliver of the people who they're representing.
And thanks for that call, Nate. And Lily, I've heard the argument, and I've talked to some guests over the years who say, you know, the American population keeps getting bigger and bigger, and the House of Representatives population stays the same. Each representative representing more and more people, it's impossible to be in touch with your constituents in that way. What do you think of the notion of embiggening the House of Representatives?
Yeah, I mean, at this point, it seems like it's not a bad idea, in part because it used to be that a House member would represent about 500,000 people, and there are lots of districts where that's not the case. Lots and lots of districts. And so it really is this question of potentially having more representatives who can better represent more people in the House.
Lily, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me on today, Rob.
That's Lily Gorin, professor of political science and global studies at Carroll University in Waukesha. She talked to us today about why Congress seems to be particularly dysfunctional and the particular form that dysfunction is taking lately. Still time for you to share your complaints about Congress, maybe your solutions. Join in, email ideas@WPR.org. That's ideas@WPR.org. Let us know what's on your mind.